Hey, welcome to The Conversation. This is Andy Mason, and you're joining a conversation around the messy intersection between faith, family, and work. This session, I get to bring you a recording from, I was recently in Lexington, Kentucky, and did a session there about qualified, how so often we have excuses for why we don't do what we could do, or what we want to do, or even the big things that are really in our heart. If that's you and you've got those reasons or excuses that's holding you to an average life, this will destroy those excuses and help you launch out into who you were born to be.
I want to tell you some of my story and just some of my excuses, and then just how I'm the one that's surprised the most of what I get to do today. And the key to all of it is getting close to Jesus and following his voice. And if you say yes to that and fully surrender to following Jesus, you will be astounded and amazed at what unfolds in your life. And I guarantee you, it'll be hard. I guarantee you, it'll be difficult. There are oppositions, there's challenges. But if day by day we'll make the steps and refuse to make excuses, make a step rather than an excuse, you find yourself in places where you're just astounded. What am I? Who am I? Who am I, God? And what is my people that you've done this for us? You took me from following the sheep, and you've given me a place to be able to influence people from all sorts of nations. I'm astounded and amazed, and I just sit here and say, wow. So, a little bit of, just a little bit of context. Has anyone played basketball? Two, three, I don't play basketball. I played rugby and I played football, soccer, like the round ball football. What I understand though is I read this about this man by the name of John Wooden, phenomenal American coach. And he talked about a bunch of different things, but he talks about that there's two kinds of failure. One is on the basketball court, they're doing their bouncy thing, running up and down. And you look and you can see the hoop at the end there, and there's people around you, and you're thinking, I might miss. So you don't take a shot. I could miss, I could fail, so I'm not going to take a shot. That's one kind of failure. The other kind of failure is there's people all around you, you're half the size, and they're all this size, but you get up there and you hustle your way, and you take a shot, and it hits the rim and bounces off. Or it completely misses the ring altogether. You failed to make the point, but you took a shot. The failure, this failure of I might miss, so I'm not going to try. That's not excusable. But this one is. I want to live a life that's continually taking shots. Continually taking shots. Some of them are going to miss. Some of them are going to bounce off. I'm going to end up with my face on the floor. But I'm learning, just take a step, take another step. That was Martin Luther King, by the way. Just take another step, and you'll find you're in places that you never, ever dreamed of. So how do I get to be doing what I'm doing today? That's a whole nother story, and we're not going to talk about that. But I want to talk about how I grew up and what that looked like. So this is me. This is a picture of my horse. His name is Jim. And since we're in Kentucky, you're all about horses and bourbon. New Zealand's about horses and sheep, but not bourbon. Or certainly not my life. So I grew up in a very sheltered Christian home, and I was terrified. I played guitar in church and eventually led worship, but my playing guitar was literally behind the drummer. Just to give you some of what I was like. The drummers were a bit farther forward, and I'd kind of been behind the drummer. I'm scared of people. So I end up doing this two-year cadetship, and I thought that's what I would do with my life. I love animals. I love the outdoors. Horse and dogs, 12,000 sheep and 500 cattle. It was really fun. It was a two-year cadetship, and it changed my life. But I made steps from there. I go to university. I did agricultural science. The project that I did was the optimum profitable combination of venison, velvet, and breeding hinds. Like, you think, what? It's deer. We manage and farm deer. It's thinking, how's that useful for me today? Oh, totally. Just totally. Just, it's called education. That's what we do. doesn't necessarily have to apply, you just try it. So I did that, and then I worked for a consultancy company in New Zealand and realized I actually can't help anybody. I know how to fix a fence and shear a sheep, but what are we doing here? But there's this proverb. So here's a secret. Here's a quick win for you if you want a quick win out of today's message. There's a proverb that says that even the fool seems smart, wise, when he shuts his mouth. So here's the secret. Everywhere you go, just don't say anything. And people think you're smart. And if you pause and then you just say something slowly, not like too slow, because that's an issue as well. But I used to come and I was with this, like my boss was a very, very good consultant. And so I would just say nothing because the people are all smarter and wiser than me. But he would get me to do one thing. Like, I want you to do a cost comparison of these different fertilizers. And that's kind of easy stuff because you just spend half an hour beforehand. And then so here's nothing, 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 nothing. And then now Andy's going to come up and give us a cost comparison of these different fertilizers. So that's all I would do. And then I'd go back and I'd be quiet. What happened over time is everybody thought I was this numbers guy, like this genius, brainy, because all I'd ever do is these numbers things that were way prepared, really basic. What's the point? Even a fool sounds wise when you shut your mouth. So some of us, maybe that's the take-home message, just say nothing. But here's the point. Before that first job, I had to get a psych test, because I'm going out, I'm a consultant, they want to make sure I'm not a sociopath or some weird thing. And so I sit down, I come into this room, it's an interview, you fill out some forms, and then you sit down face to face with a psychologist. Now, it's a room, it certainly seemed like a room this big, but there's no chairs, there's just two chairs in the middle. And I walk in, and he's already sitting there at a little table. I sit down, and I'm just intimidated already, face to face with this guy, and he looks at me, and his first question is, why do you have such low self-esteem? I don't know about you, but if someone, a psychologist, asks you why you have such low self-esteem, if you didn't have it before, you're now certified. So I've got every reason not to do what I'm doing because I'm certified by a psychologist that I have low self-esteem. I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to New Zealand. I'm going to find Frodo. And I'm just like, I'm not interested. Are you tracking with me? So I had all of these excuses why I can't do this. And I'm scared. And I'm scared of people. What if I fail? What if they don't like me? I can't speak. All of those things. Except that I started to believe that God transforms lives. And I realized the closer I get to Him, my life starts getting transformed. And so we step by step, I'm growing in life with Him and making these steps. And I grow as a business consultant. And then I grow in a relationship management role. And then in 2008, my wife and I and our four children, God speaks to us and says, leave everything and go to a new country. And it's another whole story, the scariest thing in our lives. But scripture upon scripture upon scripture and wise counsel upon wise counsel that confirmed it. We end up in Redding, California. After 9 months, I connect with this guy by the name of Danny Silk. It's just the fingerprints of God. It turns out that the last 15 years of our lives prepared us for doing what we're doing now. And we're just clueless. And then I end up doing these dream workshops. So helping people tap into the dreams and desires of their hearts. How God made you. How He made you is amazing. The way we sing that song, day and night, let incense arise. What do you think that actually is? That you're going to be putting like fragrance and swinging it? Like, here's what I believe it really means. Your work is worship. And when I realize my work is worship, then day and night, you're worshiping. That's what it really means. As opposed to sitting on some cloud playing something. It's like this is the most boring thing in the world. But when I realize my work is worship and the work of my hands gives Him praise and everything I do, then I can do with God, not apart from God. from a friendship, not an employee, then day and night let incense arise. Whether I'm the police officer, whether I'm the mum, whether I'm the teacher, whether I'm the attorney general, whether I'm the assistant, whether I'm the CEO, everything I do can bring him praise. That's what it really means. And it suddenly makes everybody valuable. So we go with this story, and I get invited into Toronto. At Toronto, the Father's Heart, and we're doing this dream workshop, which is really all about the heart of the Father, at the place where this thing spun off. And I'm freaking out. What am I doing here? What? How could I, this little guy, that guy, I'm still seeing myself like that guy. Give me my horse, my dogs. Like, I see myself like that, and now I'm doing this dream workshop in Toronto, and I'm thinking, what am I even doing here? And my wife is just so good for me. Just, she's a truth teller. And she's like, Andy, you need to slap yourself. That's my translation of what she said. She's like, go and sort it out with Jesus. You're so undermining and making excuses for why you're not doing what you're right here to do. And so I go and I say, Jesus, I'm believing the lie that I'm not good enough. Who am I to be doing this? I'm not qualified. And so I've learned to do this simple exchange. Jesus, I give you the lie that I'm not good enough. I give you the lie that I'm not qualified. I give you the lie that I can't do this, and give it up to you, and I let it go, and I refuse to make agreement with that anymore. And Jesus, what do you want to give me in exchange? What do you want to say to me instead of that? And I pause, and I'm quiet, and then the first thing that pops in my head is this thought: you're my boy, and you represent me really well. And I'm thinking, not sure if I believe that. So that's the journey of learning to believe that I truly am a child of God, that I truly am who He says I am. So what about you? What's your dream? Like, what's your wildest dream? If you could do anything in the world, if you were fearless, you had zero fear of failure, what would you try? If you had a blank check that you're not going to spend on yourself, what would you do with that? If you could pick up the phone and dial anyone in the world to build a connection with, who would that be? If you said, been thinking about this, I feel like this is the thing I want, born to change this. If you could change one thing in the world, what would it be? Just think about that for a moment. Now that's your dream. Here's what we do. We then say, okay, that was your idea. Well, have you asked God what He would do? Oh my gosh, I don't want to ask Him that because He does things way bigger and scarier than I do. But that's what you can start with. We go through a process helping people do that. So what's your excuse? Are you aware of that? Why have you not done that? Why have you not moved that? Because I'm guessing if most of us have been doing that, we probably wouldn't be here this morning. Or we might be. We'd probably be here like buzzing about what's going on. Are you with me? What's your excuse? Here's some of the ones that I've read about. Abraham was too old. Moses couldn't speak. Timothy was too young. Have you heard of these people? Rahab was a prostitute. What was your excuse again? Tommy is in Zimbabwe and is a bankrupt country. And what did he do? Started Shark Tank, Zimbabwe, with no money. David was abused. Leah was ugly. Oh, no one has that excuse here, though, right? Jacob was a liar. Gideon was scared. Peter was impulsive and uneducated. Paul was a murdering religious fanatic. Deborah was a woman. Should we say that one again? Oh, I can't do it because I'm a woman. And I like her. Isn't it? That's a cool story to read in the book of Judges. Martha had anxiety. Elijah was suicidal. Mary was unmarried. Jesus was from Nazareth. What good could come from Lexington, Kentucky? Thomas wasn't sure, and Lazarus was dead. Are you tracking with me? What was your excuse again? Oh, I was dead. I'm dead. It's like, oh, no, you're not. You are less dead than you think you are. And the closer you get to Jesus, the more alive you become. When we get it and we realize and start to live what he's born, created us to do, life happens. Hope deferred makes a heart sick, but a dream fulfilled, a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Is it possible that the world is looking and watching and waiting for you to happen? What's your excuse? My wife was coaching this woman. She's in her 60s. Oh, I'm too old. I don't have money. You just like, you can tell yourself the excuses. They're coaching and she's got a coffee and my wife's got an iced water. And my wife is a no share spit person. Do you know people like that? They don't share their drinks. So this woman, they're coaching backwards and forwards. And this woman has got this idea, this dream to start a business that's going to work with women coming out of trafficking. It equips them, empowers them, equips them. But she's just struggling. Like, I'm just not sure. Is this God? Is this just me? Like, I'm too old. I can't do it. I haven't got this experience. And Janine's walking her through. And then suddenly, 45 minutes into the conversation, the woman just goes bright red from the neck up. Like, bright red. So my wife thinks, oh, no, she scalded herself on the coffee. So she takes her iced water, no share spit, and passes her iced water to the lady and then suddenly realizes it's 45 minutes into the conversation. The coffee's cold. It can't be that. So she does one of those, just swoops like it's normal. And says, what's happening? And this woman says, as we were talking about whether I have permission, I can do this, is God with me and going after this dream, I had this vision. And I saw a hand come down from heaven and stamp approved on my dream. The same is true for you. You have permission to create. You have permission to discover. You have permission to explore. You have permission to fail and make a mistake. And you have permission to get up, clean up your mess, and get going again. You've got permission to live your life not defined by the history of who you were, of what you've done, but by the future, what you're called to be. You've got permission to dream. So good. It applies to you today. You say, well, is there a Bible verse for that? I'm glad you asked. 1 Corinthians 1, 25 to 31. Now, this is the New King James Version. Like, this like... It's not even one of the cool, fancy new ones. It says, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. That means if I get the wisest of the wise people in the planet here today, right now, and we call it a think tank, a mastermind. And they're going to mastermind how we're going to rebuild a nation. And this is going to be great. I'm going to have, who would you have in that? Just shout out some names. Warren Buffett, good job. Who else? Bill Gates, Donald Trump. Whoever. Well, we're going to have to vote on that. But anyway, who else? Okay, you're going to have a bunch of people that you think are the smartest people, the wisest people on the planet, the strongest people on the planet to get together. What does this Bible verse say? It says that the foolishness of God is wiser than men. That means that their best idea, they come up with their best idea. God's stupid idea is better than that. Does that mean we discount this? No. We value this. We build on this. We acknowledge this. That's what we're working with. but I'm listening for God's ideas, because one idea from God changes the world. The peanut. Have you heard the story of the peanut in America? Was it George Washington Carver? God, give me ideas. It gets an idea for a peanut. Like, that's a phenomenal story. The foolishness of God is wiser than men. So who wants one of God's dumb ideas? But what if you could get the good ones as well? All of them are good. How do you get that? Learn to hear his voice. Follow his ways. Walk in a life that's disciplined while becoming excellent at everything else. Being diligent. Study. Learn. For you see your calling, brothers and sisters. Not many wise according to the flesh. Just look around. Not many wise. Not many mighty. Not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty. And the base things of the world, the things which are despised, God has chosen. And the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. Did you catch that? So the very things that you call an excuse, well, I'm not of noble birth. Well, I'm not that smart. Well, I'm not that strong. God's chosen you. Are you catching this? The very things that you think disqualify you, actually put your hand up for being picked by God. Because then you can't get the credit for it. It's his. You know what that means? Who you are is enough.
That's right.
Who you are is enough. I heard my wife say this when I was sitting in some meeting. And I'm like, oh my gosh, say that again. Okay, who you are is enough. Say it again. Who you are is enough. God has chosen you. And when he's chosen you, nothing else matters. But you've got to do something and not just passively sit there like a puppet. You know, hear the beautiful thing? It's not all. Because it carries on. 1 Corinthians 2, 1 to 5. And I, brethren, this is Paul saying, he'd originally been to these people and did what's known as the best preaching sermon in all of history. Like, okay, you guys come into seminary school, preach like that. Here's the only problem is he had no results. As in, it was terrible, it didn't work. No one really transformed or changed. So then he comes back to them. Now this is Paul, the theologian, the orator, the amazing guy. And now he's writing a letter back to the same people and he's saying this. And I, brethren, when I came to you, I did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom. Who are we talking about? Paul, who studied under Gamaliel. He's the leading philosopher of their day. So he's like the genius of geniuses. I mean, you read half the New Testament, you realize, oh my, what? Whoa, this guy's like deep. Can you simplify that for me? This is Paul. When I came to you, I did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God. I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness. Say weakness. Anyone got any of those? A couple. In fear. Oh, I'm not supposed to have fear. I'm a Christian. Oh, don't be stupid. Like if you're going to do anything, you're going to have fear. It's just what you do when you feel afraid. David, King David, in the book of Psalms says, but when I am afraid, not if, when I'm afraid, I trust in you. God, I'm freaking out here. I don't want to do this because I'm terrified, but I will trust in you. I don't trust my ability to hold on to him. I trust his ability to hold on to me. I'm going to swing through this. I'm terrified. I'm going to scream, but I'm just going to like, I've got the roller coaster like thing on. Like, and you're like, woo-hoo! Awesome. Look at me, selfie. Look at me. I'm awesome. And it gets to the top. It's like, whoa, how come it's all stopped? And then suddenly, whoosh, you're like, whoa, money falls out of your pockets. And then you end at the end. It's like, Let's do it again. Let's do it again. That's what this scripture is talking about. That's exactly what this scripture is talking about. I was with you in weakness and fear and in much trembling, and my speech and my preaching were not with the persuasive words of human wisdom. It is not how good you can talk or act or walk, like you got the swagger. It's not about that. You got your pants down here if you're a teenager. It's like, it's not like that. It's none of that. My speech and my preaching were not with the persuasive words of human wisdom, but in a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. It's like, man, I've heard what you're talking about. I've heard that before. Actually, you don't say it as good as those people, but when you speak, something's affected me. When you walk in the room, I felt peace. What is that? When you are a part of this conversation, we just want you more around in our office, because when you're a part of our office, things just work smoother. What is it about you? No, you don't want to know. No, I do want to know. Like, what is it? No, you don't want to know. No, I do. What is it? What's your secret? Are you like into karma or like crystals or something? No, it's Jesus. Oh, no. Oh. It's like, come on, people. I was not the persuasive words of human wisdom, but a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of God, in the men, but that your faith would not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Hey, I've become the best that I can be, but I know what I'm doing is way better than that.
So good.
That gap, I don't have to medicate or self-sabotage. I just can simply acknowledge I'm the best that I can be. And it's not, oh, it's all God. No, it's not, because I'm speaking. It's not that good. But that gap between what I know I can do and what's happening, that's called the favor of God. That's called the wisdom of God. That's called, I said yes and took risk and grew. But what he's done is so much better than that. So all I can simply do is say thank you. Are we tracking? Do you know what that means? Number one is, who you are is enough. But when I take all of me and I bring all of me to him and I get all of him, that means that who you are is perfect.
Come on.
Are you tracking with me this morning? What was your excuse again? Oh, I'm dead. We fixed that one already because you're listening. You're listening. You're hearing me now. Are we tracking? But that's not all. Now just remember, who do I get all of this from? Was this deep revelation of mine that I got? No, I was listening to my wife, actually. She just said it, and I just packaged it like this. So you think, oh, Andy, this is awesome. No, it's actually, I got it off my wife, and I got to be here, and she's not, so you get this. You're welcome. But just remember, don't quote Andy, quote Janine. You just remember that. Who you are is perfect. Who you are, how he made you, is amazing. Your mouth was designed for worship that silences the enemy, and everywhere you go is a perfect health zone, because with God nothing is impossible. Are we tracking? So then there's this guy. So at least there was one guy in history that could have legitimately said that he could have done it. He's the fulfillment of 400 years of prophecy. His name means deliverer. He's born at the perfect time. He got the best training. He got picked up out of the slave population and miraculously gets sent down the river, and the Pharaoh's daughter picks him out. And he gets trained in the palace. So he gets the best food, the best training, the best personal trainer. Like, he gets to learn the language, the culture, the ways. He's getting trained by the king, who is the global king, the biggest king in the world. He's got the best, that's the best of the best. He's got the latest iPhone. He's got the latest everything. He's got the marketing people. He's got the coolest haircut. He's got the now it's tattoos. You're supposed to have thick. Come on, people. He's got everything. He's got the jeans. Skinny jeans, if he's a skinny jean person. But maybe it wasn't in there. Maybe it was like bell-bottom jeans. He's got all of it. He's got the cool little beard thing going on. He's probably got the teeth whitener. Like, he's got all of the stuff, both intellectually, physically, the people around him, to be fully qualified. He's like, I got it. and he has this revelation. This is what I was born for. So he, Moses, this is, if he hadn't worked it out, it's Moses. So he takes matters into his hands, kills an Egyptian. What happens? It's like, nah. You got it right, but that was just the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
And so what happens? He runs, figures, I've screwed up. He spends 40 years where? In the wilderness. What is he doing? I figured he went to New Zealand because there's a bunch of sheep. No, it can't have been New Zealand because there's no grass. It's like, it's got to be green and look like kind of that. So that's definitely not New Zealand. What he doesn't realize is he's spending 40 years learning how to lead 3 million people through the what? Wilderness. He's learning where the grass is, where the water is. He's learning how to navigate. He doesn't know that. He just thinks, I'm a loser. I failed. I've screwed it up. And he's wandering around in the middle of the desert, kind of like Lexington, Kentucky. Where? Redding, California. It's called the armpit of California. Like, armpit. So, what good could come out of there? Wait and see. Are you tracking with me? Moses thinks it's all over. My life's done. There's nothing I could do. He's walking through the desert, and suddenly there's this burning bush, which apparently wasn't too uncommon. If you look at, talk, read some science, stuff sort of happened. Except this one talks to him. He's like, it's a little burning bush. Suddenly there's this bush there. And now it's like it's smoking. It's like, whoa, dude. It's like if he was in the 60s, it would have been, what is this? What did I, my... And then suddenly a voice comes out of it, Moses. Are you? This is like, this is the weirdest thing ever. This is crazy. And says, this voice says, Moses, take off your shoes. It's like, well, introduce yourself first. It's like, the bush says, take off your shoes. Like, you just think, I'm whacked out. I'm really whacked out now. It goes through this journey. It's God speaking to him. He turns aside. Some of you feel like you've lost and you've wasted it, and God knows exactly where you are in the middle of the wilderness. He says, I know your number. I got GPS tracking device. Way better than that. You're implanted. He knows exactly where you are and how to get your attention. And he says, Moses, it's not over. Actually, you're in the perfect place at the perfect time, and now's your time. Turn. I want to send you back, and you're going to be my voice, and you're going to be the deliverer that I prophesied you are. And all of your training has been perfect for this very moment. And you've been hidden in obscurity, and nothing seems to have worked. But actually, I've been training you without you even realizing it. Now it's time. And what does Moses say?
Oh, yeah, baby. Here we go.
No, he doesn't. He's like, who am I? Who am I to do this? Now he realizes none of this training qualifies him to do what God would have him to do. When you've got a God-sized dream, no earthly thing is going to help. And plus he's believing lies about himself. It's like, So he's like, I couldn't do this. Moses is like, who am I? And you know what the cool thing is? God does not even answer his question. He doesn't tell him, you're Moses. With that, like, God voice that I've never heard. He doesn't say anything about him. He doesn't say, remind him of his history. He doesn't say any of that. What does he answer? This is in Exodus 3:11. Moses says, who am I? And God says, I will certainly be with you. But I'm dead. I will certainly be with you. But I'm hopeless. I've lost hope. I tried this. I will certainly be with you. But I'm a woman. I will certainly be with you. But I'm a man. I will certainly be with you. But I'm confused. Well, I will certainly be with you. But I didn't get educated. I will certainly be with you. Well, who am I? I will certainly be with you. What's the point? When God is with you, nothing else matters. When God is with you, there is no such thing as an excuse or a reason why you can't, because God is with you. When you're focused on yourself, there's every reason not to move forward. But when I focus on who is with me, it's going to probably be okay. This is probably going to be okay. It's like, could you imagine traveling international with Warren Buffett? Is that going to be a good experience or a bad experience? Nobody knows you. But everybody knows him. And he's got his own plane, he's got everything. And they say, well, who are you? I'm with him. Are we tracking? It's the same with God, except a gazillion times better. It's like, well, who are you? Doesn't matter, I'm with him. What's his name? Jesus walks on water. Actually, he created you. Are we tracking? What's your excuse? Who you are is enough. Who you are is perfect. But when God is with you and you're so aware of God with you more than anything else, who you are is irrelevant. Now, that is not saying you're nothing. That is saying it actually doesn't matter. Because when God is with you, it doesn't matter whether you've been through divorce, bankruptcy, prison, homelessness, addiction, lack of education. It doesn't matter. It does not matter how far you've got, what your excuses is. When God is with you, who you are is actually irrelevant. Because it's about him that no flesh would glory in his presence. So here's what we're going to do is, so what do I do next? Oh my gosh, I've got no excuse for not dreaming now, for not taking a risk, for not stepping out. We just destroyed it. But some of us have still got that. So we need to hear what he would say. So I want you to close your eyes a moment. And we're just going to do this simple exercise. For me, I'm not good enough and I'm not qualified. But I want you to do the same. Holy Spirit, what lies am I believing that's holding me back? Okay, who's got a lie? You know it. That's the excuse. It's actually a lie, which means it's not true. It's just the shackles that Tommy talked about holding my ankles. So, you got one? So here we're going to do the exchange. Let's do it like this. So Jesus, I give you the lie. Now, I want you to say it out loud. Just, if you don't want the person beside you to know, this is their lie anyway, so it's common. It's so ridiculously common. It's that I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified. I'm not whatever. So Jesus, I give you the lie that, and just say what it is. Everyone's doing it together. I give you the lie that I'm not qualified, that I'm not good enough. Now let's do this. Now Jesus, I turn to you. What do you want to give me in exchange? And then pause. And let's just see what he wants to say. Maybe you sense something. Maybe you see a picture. Just say, hey, Jesus, how do you see me? Jesus, thank you that you paid the ultimate price, not for a workforce, but for a family. Thank you that who we are is enough. Who we are is perfect. And with you surrounding us, actually who we are is irrelevant as we just step by step walk into the future that you designed for us. Father, forgive us where we've fallen short of what you intended. That's called sin. Forgive us for everything that separated us from you. Even our efforts, our vain imaginations, all the things that we thought. It's like, no, it's Jesus what you did. Jesus, thank you for what you did. We receive the grace that comes from knowing what you paid for. We receive that. We wrap it around our hearts. And I just receive and embrace everything that you said about me. Help us to walk into the fullness of that. Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your peace. Thank you for your comfort. It's not the persuasive words of human wisdom, but it's your presence on a person's life that makes the difference. Not stress, not striving, but the very peace of God. So thank you that you're with me. Thank you for a spirit of peace. Let every person feel your pleasure. Let just the person of God wrapping around us, as Psalm 91 says, your massive arms surrounding me. Your wraparound presence. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Just as in this place, and just a place of peace, a place of, you know what, it's going to be okay. I need to remember to come back to this place and recenter that actually the source of my increase is God himself anyway. So I come back to this place, and then from that place, just say, what's one thing that I can do to move forward? What's one thing that I can move forward with in this? Maybe it's a crazy dream. Maybe it's going back to school. Maybe it's changing location. Maybe it's talking to the person that you've struggled talking to. Maybe it's asking for forgiveness. Whatever that may be, what's the one thing that you can do, knowing that God is with you? What's that one thing you can do to move forward? Now tell somebody that. Here's the one thing I'm going to do differently this week as a result of knowing that God's with me, who I am is enough, and now I can move towards these crazy dreams. One thing. So turn to the neighbor and tell them what you're going to do.